Welcome to Hustle and Pro Season 2, talking sports in Frisco from youth to pro. Now here's your host, Kelly Walker.
Welcome to a special edition of Hustle and Pro. So today we're not highlighting a specific guest and telling somebody's story so much, but we're pulling a few friends in to talk about The Last Dance. So we've got Chad Brown, one of our favorite Texas Legends players, and we've got Fred Hammond. He's a local business owner, but also a huge sports fan. So hey, Chad and Fred, how are y'all doing today?
Doing great. Doing great.
Excited to be with you.
Absolutely.
Okay, y'all ready to jump in? Let's talk about this. There's 10 hours of The Last Dance documentary of the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan. We're going to go through kind of episode by episode so we don't miss anything that we want to point out. I guess just off the top, I originally kind of in my mind thought, oh, the Jordan documentary. But I don't know about y'all, but I was really excited when it sort of was breaking down each episode with like different player highlights and so that we could learn more about, I mean, of course we all want to learn about Jordan, but it was cool to see like the teams getting put together and broken apart and like the different player and personality and coach, you know, aspects of that whole like team dynamic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So it's kicked off with episode one. It kind of introduced like the whole thought process, I guess, behind why this is even called The Last Dance. So it was with Jerry Krause really showing the rocky relationship with Phil Jackson. And he's the one who really said that, like, even after the Bulls have won all these championships, I guess they were at five at that point, that this is going to be Phil's last season, The Last Dance. And so that's kind of where we get that. So let's see. Let's jump in. I mean, first of all, who thinks Jerry Krause is – a genius and kind of like that best GM that I think Pippen even gave him that title at the very end of this? Or was he like a cancer and kind of ruined this team at the end?
So I think Jerry Krause was a genius. He set it up, said there's no tomorrow, there's no next season with you guys. It's one chance, make the most of it. And the players rallied around that, realizing there may not ever be this opportunity again. So, and it proved to be successful.
Right, for sure. And I totally agree with that. You know, I definitely believe that, you know, like you said, it was no reason to, you know, say that at the beginning of the season. You know, it is a business at the same time, you know, with decisions and things like that as a GM. But like you said, man, you have the best player in the world. You know, you have to, you know, if you got to, you know, tie some strings or you got to, you know, do what you got to do, you know, as a GM to keep your coach, you know, you have to do that. You know, you got to. You guys have won five championships. You know, why not? You know, so I believe that, you know, Jerry Krause, I can't say anything bad about him because, you know, he did his job. You know, he got the team together in the best way that he could. But, you know, like personally me, I just feel like, you know, you got a good team like that. You guys have been winning championships, you know, the legacy starting to build for Chicago. You know, they're starting to become that dynasty, you know, the Lakers and the Celtics dynasty. You know, I feel like you have to do whatever it takes to keep that thing rolling, man.
Right. And,
you know, so it's tough. It was tough. You know, it's like I said, at the end of the day, you know, it's decisions and it's a business. But, you know, when you have an opportunity like that, you know, you have to seize the moment and you got to do whatever it takes.
I know, right? It seems like there was so much left on the table. Okay, so the thing about Krause is Jerry Reinsdorf was told, he said that he was told when he asked around before he hired him, everybody in the league said, don't touch this guy. Yet, you know, of course he still does it, which that happens in sports all the time.
Right.
And sometimes when everybody says, don't touch this guy, it's almost like tempting for some of these owners and people to go get him anyways, just to maybe prove that, hey, you know, I can change him or he'll be fine here or, mm-hmm. he won't disrupt us or whatever it is. We see that all the time, especially living in the land of the Dallas Cowboys, right? But I thought that was interesting that he did it anyway. And then this guy ends up being like kind of like internal, like what do you call it? Locker board material that motivates the team. Like he's in internally, he's in on their side, yet he ends up being like the thing that the team can like use as motivation.
Right.
And not in a good way, though, in kind of the opposite that when you think of a manager, you think of someone that inspires and leads. He actually inspired and led them through their disgust with him, or not liking him, or not respecting him. Maybe that's the word.
Yeah, I totally agree. I believe that, you know, they gave them motivation, but like you said, not in a good way. It kind of gave them a chip on their shoulder towards their GM in a way to prove them wrong, you know, to prove them wrong, to be like, hey, man, we need to stick together. And this is the team to do it. And, you know, we're trying to build a legacy, build a dynasty. And, you know, so I feel like, you know, he gave them motivation. But like we all say, you know, it might have been in a negative way because of the situations and the decisions that, you know, he was going to make towards the team in due time. So I believe that the motivation for those guys was from him, you know.
Could have been directed a little better, though. Like, I couldn't believe watching some of the digs Jordan would take and some of the stuff he would say to him. Right, I mean, right. Like, I can't imagine. I'm guessing, Chad, you, because you got Donnie Nelson, right? And you got people like that around you. Like, can you imagine making fun of him in such like a derogatory way? And thinking you can say whatever you want to him? That's crazy to me.
No, well, didn't he say something like the diet pills and you're fat and short in one of the episodes? I mean, I'm amazed an athlete can say that, not be held accountable for it. It was
right. Just, I mean, I want to say that. I want to say that one of the jokes that Jordan was saying was he asked Krause if he wanted to practice with him, and he was like, oh, well, we might have to lower the rim or something for you because you probably can't even shoot the ball into the 10-foot hoop or something like that.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, and it's just, it's, like you said, this is kind of, it's crazy how, you know, a player can talk to their GM like that and things like that. Like, me personally, I can never see myself talking to, you know, Donnie Nelson like that, or, you know, anybody like that, because, you know, those guys, man, you know, they make decisions, and, you know, they put everything together, you know. But you could just tell that, you know, the relationship that they had wasn't as tight, you know, because, you know, I in a way, they didn't agree with him. They didn't agree with the things that he was saying. So, you know, it's hard. It's challenging, you know. When you have a GM and you have a person that owns everything and that makes the decisions and you don't agree with them, you know, it's tough. And, you know, you lose the respect a little bit for them, you know.
For sure. That's the thing. Those digs he was taking, it wasn't in good fun. It wasn't like they were close and it was, you know, making fun of your brother or something. Like, he didn't like him.
Right.
So they also talk in this episode about, like, young Jordan days. Like, I think his mom talked about a letter he wrote home from North Carolina saying, like, he was out of money. He was down to last $20 or something and needed some money or something. And
Yeah, I remember that.
Which is crazy.
Sorry
to think.
About the cell phone bill.
Yeah.
The phone bill.
Yeah, that he, just, like, he, you know, can't pay his bills. And then little did he know then what his life would unfold to be. But and then he talked about, so he was drafted in 84, and I think it was him on screen talking about when he was drafted that he just wanted the Bulls to be a respected team. Because at that point, you know, it was the Celtics, it was all these other teams, and it, you know, he was kind of the bottom. He felt like he was getting drafted by a bottom team. And so interesting that that's like what he put out there and put on his shoulders. And so, like, Chad, I'm interested from your perspective as a guy who just finished their rookie season after college, like, can you imagine putting that much kind of like personal, I don't know, goals on yourself to like make a franchise change their whole, you know, attitude, or not attitude, but reputation?
Right. And when Jordan came out of college, you know, getting drafted and going to a team like that, you know, it just shows, you know, his confidence in himself. You know, shows the confidence in himself and what he believed that in due time what he can do to a team. And it just shows that, you know, he, like I said, he was confident. He was a guy that stood firm on what he believed. And and personally for me, you know, that's pretty impressive. That's pretty impressive, you know, for being a rookie, a person that young, you know, coming into the league with those type of goals is impressive. you know, when you come into the league or you start playing pro your first year, you know, I personally, you know, my goal was, you know, I wanted to win. You know, I'm a competitor. I love to win. But when you come in as a rookie, you know, you kind of want to just, you know, find your niche and find your way, you know, as a pro.
And, like, do your part. Like, that's what a lot of people say. Like, exactly. I'm going to serve my role. I'm going to do my job the best I can to help this team out. But rarely do I hear any of you guys say, I just want to make this franchise different.
Right. And this is challenging because, you know, when you come in, you know, you're trying to, you know, find your way. You're trying to have, you know, your personal goals in a way and stuff like that as a rookie. And, you know, for a guy to say that he wants to change a franchise, you know, as a rookie, you know, getting drafted to, you know, one of the lower teams in the NBA at that time, you know, that's impressive. You know, it just speaks volumes of his commitment, his dedication and his confidence that he had in himself, you know?
Yeah, like you said, the confidence. Yeah. Cause most people just aren't, they don't have that vision at that time. Obviously he's making that. All right. Any other episode one notes that you guys have that you want to throw out there before I move on to episode two?
I'm trying to think. I mean,
they all run together. I know. I had to.
They do. I mean, it's just, you know, speaking of, you know, it was just, like you said, I want to like piggyback off what you said, you know, how the team kind of got together, you know, and the strides that they had to take, you know, it's pretty impressive how, you know, it takes a long time. It takes a long time to build a team, to build a dynasty, you know, and, you know, I feel like with all those players and the coaches and the whole organization, you know, it was some bumps. It was some bumps that they had to take, you know, and I believe that, you know, in due time that they were able to, you know, succeed. But I feel like overall, you know, episode one was showing the ways that they had to do it and the bumps that they had to take in order to get it done. So I believe that episode one was great, a great intro, starting about how the legacy and the dynasty built. And I feel like it was great.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a good transition though. And episode two. So it's the Pippen episode.
Right.
And then some, but I mean, that's really what it was focusing on. And so talk about bumps in the road, which it's cool that they went back and sort of showed us like Pippen's background a little bit, like that he was a smaller guard in high school and then his growth spurt, to 6'7", I think, made him really unique and like a totally different player tool to have those skills, but then get so big. So they talk about in this episode his ankle surgery at the end of the 96-97 season.
Right.
And how he kind of, you know, he waited till the beginning of the next season instead of having his surgery at the end of the season or, you know, using his off season. So kind of like it again goes back to the Jerry Krause issues. And he was really sticking it back to his team because of contract issues. I think now when that stuff happens today, your fans turn on you.
Absolutely.
They didn't talk about how anybody really turned on him. I mean, maybe some team stuff. Of course, Jordan was disappointed he didn't have him out there. But like if that happened today, first of all, we'd all know about it because everybody would talk about it on social media and, you know.
It is crazy
finding out that stuff. But don't you think now he would have pissed everybody off so bad taking that option?
Yeah. Well, yeah, considering he signed a contract that the general manager told him, you probably don't want to sign this long a contract. He said, I want to sign it. I think he referenced his poverty growing up, referenced his mom and dad's health. I think his dad had some real issues. And he said, I want the security of the long-term money. And then when the market changed and his value went up tremendously, he took out his frustration about signing the contract that he was counseled not to sign by the guy signing the contract. It's a great deal for the Bulls, but he signs it. And then he takes it out on the Bulls on saying, oh, well, I'm going to wait and kind of punish you guys because of the actions I did, which I felt was very selfish. And, yeah, I would be pissed too right now if I was watching that happen in Dallas with a player. It's not like they crammed him down, they franchised him, and he he got cornered into a deal that he could have gotten $40 million and he only got 20. I mean, that's not the situation. He chose that contract and had to live with the repercussions of it.
Right, right. No, I totally agree. You know, I felt like, you know, Pippen, you know, I feel like he felt a little bit of disrespect in that time. Because, you know, Jordan was getting all of the attention, all of the spotlight. And, you know, Pippen was a good player. You know, Pippen was, you know, he was, you know, right behind Jordan. Jordan was number one. He was number two, you know. And then, you know, it's tough that, you know, he felt disrespected. And I felt like you said, Fred, I felt like it was definitely a bad move for him. You know, just for his name. He was always known as a winner, a competitor, which he still is, but, you know, just doing that, you know, I felt like it was definitely selfish of him to do that for the team, for the organization. Because, you know, man, no matter what, you know, you got to play through adversity. No matter, you know, a person might say this, saying that, oh, you're the second best player and this and that. It doesn't matter, man. As long as it's about winning, it's about building a legacy, it's about building a franchise for the organization. And no matter what people say or anything like that, you know, you have to put that aside, because at the end of the day, you have to do your job and it's all about winning, you know. So, I agree with you. I feel like it was a selfish move. But, you know, everybody has that, you know, it's human nature. It's human nature to, you know, feel a certain way, you know, when a guy's getting an attention and you feel good and you're a competitor as well. So, you know, it's human nature at the same time. So,
yeah,
you know, I definitely agree.
I didn't think it was a good look when he said he wanted to enjoy his off season. He didn't want to mess up his off season being rehabbing. So he, you know, delayed it. I definitely thought it was a selfish, but he redeemed himself, right? We see in episode 10 when he is fighting through. He could have easily bailed with injury, his back hurting. Right. He could have easily, like, said, "I'm out. I'm just. It hurts too bad. This and that." Because he had that out. He was off the court. He could have stayed off the court. So I mean, even though we saw this whole ankle thing happen early, he gets plenty of bonus points later on, I guess.
Yeah. He gets redemption. He definitely gets the redemption.
Yeah.
So. The guy was Scotty was counseled not to sign the contract or that length of contract because of exactly what happened. The market changed. There was a lot more money in the NBA. And had he signed a shorter deal, he would have been rewarded. But he was concerned about his welfare and his long-term well-being and his family's well-being because his father's sickness as a kid. He just didn't want to take any chances. But when the market did turn, then he was upset about it because he lost a lot of money, left a lot of money on the table, and he took it out on the Bulls and punished not only them but his teammates by electing not to have the surgery when he should have. But the counterpoint to that was Jerry Krause could have been a good GM and renegotiated and been fair with him on his current market value to make him happy and keep him motivated and not punish the Bulls like he did. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, making it right just to make him happy and make the long term. But obviously that did not pan out the way it could have, obviously. Okay, so in this episode, this part is my favorite, that we get to see Jordan's like relationship with his brother and his dad start. It didn't start in this episode, but they show how when you go back and look at like the rivalry and the competitiveness he had with his brother is, and that he knew he always needed his dad's approval. So that's a common theme throughout the whole documentary. But, you know, he talks about like fighting with those that you love. And sometimes you fight more with your sibling than you do a stranger. You would say things to them. You would work harder to beat them at different things. And so I guess my question is, do you think having the sibling rivalry that he had with his brother, I think it was Larry, is that a legit piece of what made Jordan who he was competitive wise?
I think he's kind of had it inside him. I mean, I've coached kids with FC Dallas, and I've said, hey, you got to go for the ball. You got to be more aggressive. And they might have all the skill in the world, but if they don't have all the will in the world, it doesn't really matter. So I kind of think it was innate. I think that the two probably had the same sort of drive. Jordan had the giftings to be a professional athlete, but just the two being siblings and both having that drive just naturally probably led out to some really, like they said, some ferocious battles.
Right, right. No, I totally agree. I definitely believe that, you know, his brother motivated him. And I can speak this on this personally because, you know, I have a twin sister that actually played basketball as well.
That's right. Yes.
So we grew up together competing on the court. And I can say our battles, even though, you know, she was a girl, she was spicy. She's the girl me, you know. So she was intense and wanted to win and the motivation and the drive. So, you know, just speaking on, you know, my experience, you know, having that sibling and having those rivalries makes who you are as a player, and it helps you because you have somebody that pushes you every single day and doesn't care about your feelings. It doesn't care about, oh, I might be tired, or, you know, they don't care about that because they want to beat you as well. And it brings that competitive drive out of you. And so I can definitely say that him and his brother, those battles definitely made Jordan who he was, because it made him not want to lose and against anybody. Because if you don't want to lose against your siblings and your brothers and sisters or your family members, you definitely don't want to lose against somebody that you don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like somebody that you're not close to, or another team.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to lose to that. So
yeah, they didn't earn that right.
Right.
You. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, absolutely.
Some of the stuff that we start to see at this point too is how, like, that fight in him. Sure, he talks about with his brother, like, competing, but what it was interesting to me is all the little ways that we saw that through, like, with other players. Meaning, right, like, I think it was in an Olympic practice when he went at it with Magic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was at a team practice with Steve Kerr. And it's like one comment and it sets him off. And that's like, but I feel like he needs that. He waits for something to open up to, like, just piss him off enough to be like, okay, that's it. I'm going to go beat you. But it happened. So also besides Steve Kerr, and then they get over it, right? And yep. Well, Reggie Miller, that was a long-term one. So then he also said, like, when Karl Malone won the MVP in 97, like, it set him off to make him go play better. There was a rookie at the end.
Byron Russell.
Is that who it was?
The Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
Russell.
He said something like, why'd you quit? And, like, something that he didn't intend to make him mad, but Michael said it put him on his list. Like, it just, you know, and then Isaiah Thomas, there was a whole nother one too. They didn't shake hands after a game. But, like, these little things that he pulls out, like, as a reason, material for him to focus. Not that he even needed to play better, but when sometimes he did, right? But didn't you guys think that was super interesting to see how he would take the smallest comment or action and use it?
Yeah, I think Michael Jordan loved not just competing, but destroying people. Like, Byron Russell had no idea that he would face him in game 6 in the NBA Finals. And Jordan's like, I've got you now. And I'm not going to just beat you. I'm going to win the NBA championship as you slide away and I hit a jump shot and I walk off and with the trophy. And I think there's something about Jordan that has, like, an assassin mentality. It's not just that I'm going to compete, but I'm going to compete and personally destroy you and humiliate you. Not, like, publicly, but it's just like this obsession to crush you and whatever he's, you know, whenever you're facing him, he just wants to destroy your inner being. Not just, hey, I won, you lost, good game. No, I destroyed who you are. It's like that. That's the way I felt when I watched this.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. You know, I could definitely say that, you know, being a competitor, it makes you, you know, it's you love it. You love it. You love winning. And you love knowing that the person that you just played against lost. I can speak on that a little bit. You know, even in practice, you know, him and Steve Kerr, you know, got into it into that moment. You know, teammates are going to fight. You know, it happens. You know, when you're trying to build something and, you know, and both guys are great competitors, you know, that's going to happen. You know, and the biggest thing about, you know, being a team is that, you know, you can fight amongst each other in practice, but, you know, when y'all get on the court against a different team, you know, we're going to war together. So it's just the preparation for the war, you know, and you know, sometimes, you know, it's going to be conflicts and things like that. And, you know, that's the nature of the sport, you know, and even playing against somebody, man, it's like you said, you know, that he wanted to let him, people know that he was going to destroy them. And I can remember that even in the episode, you know, when they lost to the Magic, you know, when he came back out of retirement and lost to the Magic, and his strength coach was like, you know, take it easy, Mike, you know, take a couple days. And, you know, Mike said, you know, I'll see you tomorrow. Yeah. You know, it was just in his mind that, you know, he lost and it drove him. You know, every player that plays sports, you know, you always have to have that chip on your shoulder when you play. You know, it's just, that's what athletes, that's what we have to do. You yeah. know, and you have to have something that drives you, whether it be a comment, whether it be something that a player did. You know, I can't recall what the player name was, but I remember one of the guys said, you know, Jordan even made it up. He said, you know, good game, Mike. You know, made it up, and you know, that drove him. You know, that drove Jordan. And, you know, even when B.J. Armstrong, you know, hit that shot and was letting him know and all of the face and stuff like that, you know, against Charlotte. And, you know, just all those moments, man, you know, players have something that's going to drive them. And Jordan found anything to just get him going, you know.
Yeah, he didn't need much.
Amazing.
He didn't need much. I forgot about all that good B.J. Armstrong footage and stuff. That was good. Another yeah. thing, I mean, we don't have much time left on here. We didn't hardly get into all these episodes yet. But another thing I wanted to mention and get y'all's take on is, like, how big of a player cigars were in this whole thing, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
I mean, he was smoking cigars, like, in the locker room.
Yeah.
All kinds of footage, even in the present day interviews, which I don't know when the actual, like, current interviews took place. I mean, who knows what year that might have been, a year or two ago. I don't know. But
right.
he was always smoking a cigar. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what time that stopped when cigar. I mean, I don't think you can do anything like that in a locker room for quite a while, right?
No, yeah.
I don't know when all that stopped. Maybe whenever you stopped smoking on airplanes. But I just thought that was really interesting to see how much of a factor cigars were in his life.
Yeah. No, it was crazy. I was it's funny. It's just man.
In the locker room footage, like, I thought it was really interesting that he would separate himself so much in the locker room.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was later on in his career when he needed the extra security, or if that was just his nature to just separate himself. But I don't know, didn't you guys think that was interesting, that, like, he seemed like he would I don't know, be doing his thing, lounging somewhere separate than the bulk of his team?
It's like he needed to decompress and kind of just come off this high intensity of war and just kind of calm down, get his thoughts together, regroup, and then become a normal human again, as opposed to Superman or Black Jesus or whatever he called himself, you know. It's like this alter personality had to leave and he had to become human again, I guess.
Right. I totally agree. You know, I believe that, you know, with all the, you know, everybody's always in his face, you know, the media and the fans and players, you know, coaches asking them, you know, things, you know, the organization. And, you know, I just felt like, you know, that was his time to get away. And like you said, to kind of, like, you know, kick back a little bit, you know, kind of get his thoughts together and you know, like you said, become a, you know, human being, you know, just, you know, being a regular person.
Yeah, back to normal, like, for a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.